Good afternoon, Your Honors. Richard Bland for the appellant, Bivio. My registration number is 8203. This case is about crossing the line between adjudicating a question of law and creating a contract when the parties themselves didn't do so. And in this case, the trial court essentially resolved a negotiating impasse between parties who were attempting to effectuate what they thought was a settlement agreement. And the impasse, as you know from the record, was over the drafting of a non-disparagement clause. The settlement agreement didn't provide any more guidance than that. It simply said the parties agree to a non-disparagement clause. And in the course of the next 30 days, the parties did exchange a number of drafts that had different iterations of a non-disparagement clause, but ultimately they never reached an agreement on what that clause should say. And in particular, they disagreed on whether some element of falsity had to be incorporated into the clause to save it from being per se illegal under the antitrust laws. And not only was that an element of dispute between the parties, but also they did not agree on even if that was something that needed to be included in the clause, in other words, a qualifier of some sort. Exactly how do you qualify it? The appellees, I'll use NAIC for short, thought that the clause had to prohibit statements that were not only disparaging but also false. So they insisted on that across the board qualifier. And during the course of the negotiations, Bivio's position, first of all, was that there's no qualifier necessary, but even if there were, we have a better idea than just including an across-the-board qualifier of falsity, and that was, we will put in, or we suggested putting in, a qualifier that said, this clause shall not be construed to impair honest and fair competition between iClub and Bivio, who were the only competitors. Now, for reasons that I could never figure out, the judge decided that our proposed qualifier was somehow per se illegal, and theirs wasn't. And in fact, the only reasonable non-disparagement clause that the parties could have arrived at was the one that she basically articulated in the order. And that was, what that means is a clause that says the parties agree not to disparage each other, except they can make truthful statements about each other. And she held that that was the only possible reasonable clause that the parties could have arrived at. And because it was the only possible clause, then the fact that their minds didn't meet on the meaning of disparagement or the wording of the clause didn't matter because there was only one possibility. I would submit to you that was clearly erroneous, and she crossed the line, the judge crossed the line in creating a contract where in fact none existed, although the parties certainly and admittedly attempted to have a contract. There's no dispute about that. And if you drill down, the judge essentially made, her ruling was basically premised on three erroneous conclusions. One was that just a straightforward non-disparagement clause between these parties would have been illegal per se under the Sherman Act. In other words, equivalent to a covenant not to compete, equivalent to price fixing, equivalent to a market allocation agreement. And the judge did not cite any case, nor has the my opponent cited any case to support the idea that a non-disparagement clause between competitors is per se illegal. There's no such, if that case exists, I'll be shocked because I look for it. And in fact, the law that is out there, or the authority that is out there, strongly suggests that if it was scrutinized at all, it would be scrutinized under the rule of reason. And that makes sense because you can have, there's no one non-disparagement clause that could be written, and there's no one way that parties might implement such a clause. And so if someone were to look at the effect on competition of a non-disparagement clause, one would have to look at the actual behavior of the parties to see, well, have they used comparative advertising in the past, and as a result of this clause, do they not do that anymore? Has the behavior of the parties since then affected prices in some way or restricted output? You would have to do a rule of reason analysis. It couldn't possibly be illegal per se.
Well, Mr. Bland, let me ask you this. Without reading into it a requirement of falsity, would there be a restriction on truthful advertising?
Well, in a straightforward clause, I think arguably, but as I said in the brief, you know, you can do comparative advertising without necessarily denigrating your opponent. You know, it's assumed, both the judge and my opponent has assumed that any sort of comparative advertising automatically must be disparaging. And I don't think that's the case. You can do, you can tout your product over somebody else's without disparaging. So I don't see that there would automatically be a limitation on truthful advertising. And so that was the first where the judge first got off track, was accepting the premise that a straightforward non-disparagement clause would be illegal per se, because everything flowed from that, because the idea was, well, the parties couldn't have intended to have an illegal contract, so there must be, we've got to save it if possible. It didn't need to be saved to begin with. And the parties could have quite rationally decided to accept whatever risk, minor, it would be a trivial risk, might be involved in them entering into a non-disparagement clause. Because who would be the complaining party? Who's going to be there to complain about it? If in fact their behavior didn't change, and if in fact they continued to compete just as vigorously as they ever did, there would be nobody harmed. So it could easily have been reasonable for the parties to have accepted some level of risk that this clause might be subjected to scrutiny someday. Now the second, just past the first one, then you get to, well, okay, let's accept the first premise and let's say, well, we need some sort of qualifier. Well, what was wrong with video's suggested qualifier? I would suggest to you that it implements the meaning of disparagement a lot better than the across-the-board clause that the trial court adopted. What we proposed was that, again, that it wouldn't restrict honest and fair competition between the two competing parties. See, that was a narrowly tailored qualification. That was eminently reasonable, one of many reasonable possible clauses that the parties could have agreed to. We proposed it, the judge said no. That's also illegal per se. Well, how could it be? If by its own terms, it can have no effect on competition. Now, the other part that the judge never addressed here was that there was another party here involved in this settlement who was not a competitor, and that was NAIC. There would be no reason to qualify any non-disparagement clause as far as statements about or by NAIC. And the judge simply never came to grips with that. We're talking about two separate parties, one of whom is a competitor, one of whom is not.
Counsel, would a truthful statement about either one of the parties be prohibited under the clause?
Under non-disparagement clause?
Yeah, right. I was reading an example, if one party accused the other of a felony, theft, what would your analysis there? Would there be?
It's possible. I mean, you'd have to look at the clause at issue. I mean, there's not just one clause that fits all. I can envision a clause where it might go to the point of saying, look, you can't say anything that might be bear on, or I would use a dictionary definition, denigrate or belittle somebody, even if it's just reporting facts. You know, or reporting something that's already well known, and I would suggest to you that no, just a straightforward non-disparagement clause. If someone remarked publicly that, oh, I see that so and so was convicted of theft, how is that disparaging? I would argue. So I don't think it's automatically clear that it's going to restrict truthful statements to begin with. It's not the truth of it. A disparaging statement is one that denigrates or belittles somebody. It's not just a false statement. It can be, you can tone makes a difference. You can say something that's true about somebody, but say it in such a way and in such a context that it's quite disparaging. And that's what these parties were, that's what I would say a non-disparagement clause was supposed to do. Unfortunately, the parties simply just didn't give enough flesh around that bone of non-disparagement to enable a court to do its job, which is to adjudicate a question of law. Just didn't do it. The parties tried, and they failed, and sometimes that happens. And I would suggest to you that this case should be reversed, the judgment should be reversed. Because the parties' minds didn't meet, there's no question that the underlying settlement agreement should be rescinded. And the parties should be restored to the status quo that existed before that settlement. And I'll reserve my couple minutes.
Yeah, remaining two minutes and 3 seconds.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Perry Naranza King. With me at the council table is Ms. Amber McLean, who is with me on the brief. Well, at the outset, let me address some of the things that my friend addressed in his closing remarks. The thing that jumps out at me is the intense uncertainty that arises from some of the proposals that were made by Bivio in this case. Let's use this as an example. The so-called alternate language about free and fair competition. Nothing in this disparagement clause will prevent either party from free and fair competition. Well, what does that exactly mean? It can only mean one thing, which is truth telling. And to come to the heart of the issue, why would any court in any part of this country prevent any party, commercial, private, or otherwise, from telling the truth? There's no constitutional basis for it. There's no reason for it in antitrust law. There's never, ever a good reason for any court to prevent any party from telling the truth. Now, let's use the example of the allegation, for instance, that was in my briefs, that, for instance, Bivio, the appellant in this case, was discovered to have embezzled money. Now, money is an important thing, and both companies happen to work in the investment field. And let's say that my client, NAIC, discovers or if he's the first to discover that there's been some kind of impropriety at Bivia. Well, here's something not yet in the public field. It's clearly relevant, relevant to NAIC's customers, relevant to the general public. And yet, going back to the uncertainty issue, can NAIC make a public disclosure of this or not? Well, the very uncertainty of this issue is one that militates against overturning the order. It's the uncertainty, the chilling effect on competition, that the uncertainty around this defamation clause requires the court, I think, to uphold the decision below by the trial court. Now, our argument has four planks. But before I address them, let me try to emphasize the procedural aspect of this, which I think is determinative. There are undisputed facts here. Critical undisputed facts. The principal one being that Bivio, the appellant in this case, has 25% of the relevant market, and that my client, NAIC, and its sub, has 75% of the market, which, despite me being aware, I think amounts to 100% of the market. Now, that admission came from Bivio relatively late in these proceedings when Bivio filed a supplement to his complaint. And that is exactly where that admission shows up. And the trial judge referred to that admission in her order. Now, it's because we have 100% market control between these two parties that drives the necessary conclusion that any restriction on truthful advertising in that market scenario must be per se illegal. There's no pro-competitive reason under a 100% market share scenario where any restriction on free advertising can be held. Let me address quickly the four planks, if you will, that our position is based on. Well, the first is that there is an ambiguity in the anti-disparagement clause. So that disparagement clause or non-disparagement clause is located at section 7 of the settlement agreement. So I think it is ambiguous. The second plank of our argument is that ambiguity can be, or the gap created by that ambiguity can be filled by reference to law or custom, or indeed the undisputed facts. Now, when one looks at the undisputed facts, the fact that these are vigorous competitors with 100% market share who have a history of litigation, you can only arrive at one conclusion, which is that any restriction on advertising or saying something nasty about somebody else in those circumstances must be per se illegal. And here, I rely on the Palmer BRG case, which was a horizontal case, very interesting case. Harcourt Brace Ivanovich ran, I think, a bar brief, which is a bar preparation course. There's another competitor in the market of Georgia. What they decided to do is, why should we compete against each other? Harcourt Brace Ivanovich, we'll get out of the market, we'll license your name and pay you 30% royalties. Well, that is what the Supreme Court called market allocation or market fixing. You're taking two competitors at the horizontal level, you're taking them out and making one competitor. Well, that is exactly what's going on here. We have competitors at the same horizontal level of the market who, as a result of the uncertainty and chilling effect of this disparagement clause, are going to be less likely to compete vigorously. The fourth and final plank of the argument is the Colorado law of disparagement, which, as I understand it, includes a privilege for truthful statements. And that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about, there's two ways to look at it, whether there's a privilege for truthful statements or there's an element of falsity. I prefer to see it as simply a privilege for truthful statements. You want to sue me for saying something bad in the commercial context? Go ahead. But I have an inherent and implied right under the antitrust laws, and indeed under the Colorado Tort of Defamation or disparagement, to raise a defense of truthfulness. Now, the argument that we have based on the Colorado Tort of Disparagement is another buttressing way, alongside the antitrust laws, to simply say, look, these parties in these market conditions can only have anticipated or understood that the disparagement clause here would have this privilege for truthfulness. Now, interestingly enough, when one looks at the Sunshine case, a decision of the state Supreme Court, parties actually don't have to come to a meeting of minds to form a contract if there's only one reasonable construction of that contractual provision that's in dispute. That's exactly what we had here. You know, given the combination of the Colorado and federal antitrust laws and the Colorado tort of disparagement, there can only have been one way to construe that provision, which is with a privilege for truthful statements. Let me address one of the final points, which is, who are the parties here? Well, NAIC, National Association of Investors Corporation, is based in Michigan. It's a 501c3 organization. Their mandate or charter is to educate investors. Their wholly owned subsidiary is called iClub, I-C-L-U-B. And of course, Vivio is a Colorado-based corporation that also develops software for investment clubs to manage their affairs. Well, again, undisputed, NAIC and iClub, parent and subsidiary, have interlocking directors, 100% ownership. Again, going back to the uncertainty issue, if either one of these parties takes the chance of saying something that could be construed as disparaging, it is clear, again, the chilling effect of that is they don't know whether they're going to get dragged into a lawsuit because of the parent-subsidiary relationship, the 100% relationship, that one statement could be imputed to the other. In other words, NAIC, because of its control, its corporate control over iClub, could be accused of, hey, you let iClub say something nasty about Vivio, and we're suing you, NAIC. Even though, strictly speaking, NAIC itself doesn't do any software, but it does through its subsidiary. So my position on the issue of trying to slice and dice the disparagement clause based on who the parties are is simply this: NAIC and its wholly owned subsidiary, iClub, are one person for antitrust purposes. One person for antitrust purposes. And accordingly, if this non-disparagement clause is no good as to iClub, it's equally no good as to its parent, NAIC. I have no further submissions unless there are any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Bland, you have just slightly over 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Addressing one thing, this I would call it a chimera of eliminating competition. A non-disparagement clause doesn't do that. People can compete just as vigorously with a non-disparagement clause as they can without it. It doesn't affect pricing, it doesn't affect investment, it doesn't affect market allocation, it doesn't affect anything. If anything, all it would really do, arguably, is just make competition a little more civil, so that parties would be less likely to make, you know, irrelevant ad hominem attacks on their competitor. That you know, that highlights facts that don't really or shouldn't be considered by in the marketplace.
So there's nothing anti-competitive about a non-disparagement clause. Secondly, we can't disregard the fact that there are two entities here. One is a competitor, Cyclone. It happens to be wholly owned by a nonprofit organization. And a very valid pro-competitive reason why Bibio, as the little competitor, the little guy in the market, would want to have a non-disparagement clause that would impose some level of neutrality on NAIC. NAIC has a considerable influence in the market by virtue of who they are. They advise their customers about things like accounting software. And the non-disparagement clause, as it's applied to them, makes sure that at least there's some balance between what they'll say about one company, Bibio, and what they'll say about their own subsidiary. That's a pro-competitive reason why NAIC should be bound by an unqualified non-disparagement clause.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.